Now then, we're going to kick off our infamous episode in Scotland, where one Gavin Bain spoke to our own Julia DeWitt. Snap judgment.
Can I swear?
Yes. We'll have to bleep it, so don't overdo it. But yeah, if you feel, you know, if you feel so moved.
Okay, bleep it.
You're talking to a Scottish person. That's almost out of my control.
Uno, two, tres, four.
Do you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself, Gavin?
Yeah, I'm Gavin Bain, also known as Brains McLeod, one half of Syllable and Brains. I'd started rapping when I was a little kid. First song I ever memorized was Snow's Informer. Informer, you know, I can't even totally know how he says it, but I memorized that when I was like a real small kid. So I've always been in love with rap. First day of college, I see this kid at the gates. He's rocking the baggiest jeans, a Ramon t-shirt, painted black fingernails, and his hair's braided. I mean, he's the coolest human that I've ever seen.
And that was Bill, who I would come to know as Syllable or Silly.
We liked pretty much all the same things, so we decided to form this rap group. We weren't good, but we knew we were going to get good, and so we spent the next 2 years just mastering every discipline of rap, developing our own style, which was this humorous, multi-syllable battle rap style.
Attacking some fresh industry. Hey. I'm attacking like a Jacobite. Act first and think after. Typical Scots, stack bass and drink lager.
Then Eminem broke in 98. As Eminem's success grew, everyone that heard us would start saying, hey, you guys sound like Eminem. And after a while, we kind of took that as a compliment. I see this advertisement on this music site that just reads, are you the next Eminem? I told the guys and we just smirked and we were like, we got this. We got this. Because everyone says we are. By that point, my sister was living in London, so we took the 13-hour bus journey down to her place, crashed on the floor. And when we got there, man, the place was packed. And there was a queue of Eminem impersonators going round the block, like, twice. Seeing the faces of people coming out of the room just distraught. When we got in, we approached the X spot awkwardly and stood there in front of three A&Rs, the guys who go out and scout the talent. They were just sitting there with blank faces. We must have been rapping for about 30 seconds before I noticed two of the A&Rs whispering to themselves. And it seemed like they were trying to hold back the laughter. And when one of them cracked, within seconds it felt like the whole room was filled with laughing gas. And one of the guys was like, oh no, please, please stop. You're killing me. This is hilarious. You know, are you serious? Like, who put you up to this? Did Steve put you up to this? Did Steve put you up to this? Scottish rap, man, come on, this is ridiculous. The older A&R, who had been quiet to this point, leans forward and says, trust me, you will never make it. Come on, man, don't you watch MTV? Have you never listened to radio? They're never gonna let Scottish rap on Radio 1. I'm sorry, but you sound like the rapping Proclaimers to me. That was the blow that I'll just never forget. And I was getting real desperate, you know, I'd been kicked out of art college. I needed cash. Like, I had a mountain of bills barricading the front door from debt collectors who were keen on coming in and taking all my money. One night, I'm just lying on my bed. I can hear the 80s film, the Michael J. Fox film, Secret of My Success, is on TV. What it's about, it's like a small town boy goes to the city and makes his way to the top of a company by becoming someone else. I'm just sitting listening there, moving my lips along with the film, and I just thought, that's it. If me being me is a problem, I'll just be not me. If they want another Eminem, I'll just give them that. So I had to become American. I got the accent good enough just to record. Bill took a little bit of convincing, but when he heard the recorded American version of the song Shut Your Mouth, I could tell he just knew it was like, this sound's real now. This plan is gold. Plan was, is we'd get a record deal, we'd make a number one hit record, we'd go on TV, come clean about being Scottish the whole time and prove that the system's flawed and that only the pretty and only the crazy and only the marketable get a chance in this world. And we set about we set about becoming American. I would do everything in the American accent. I would talk to my girlfriend in the accent, and she thought that was insane, especially when I spoke in the voice during sex. The voice in my head that I was hearing would be in the accent.
Can't really do all the voices now, but like, when you imagine the kind of doofus American cool character, it's always like, you talk out the back of your throat, like, yeah, dude, like totally. You know, like, you talk like Keanu Reeves, like, no way.
No way. Yes way.
We're sitting down in a bar in Dundee, scribbling out a plan to become two badass Californian rappers like Eminem, but more exaggerated, blown out of proportion. We actually made ourselves a part of Eminem's Californian crew. We were the supremely confident, cocky, but lovable Californian wild boys, Syllable and Brains, and we were not gonna take no for an answer. But it wasn't until we actually heard there was this massive showcase happening in Madame Jojo's in Soho in London. We called up the promoter and let him know what was going down. It kind of went something like this.
Hello?
Yeah, we're Eminem's boys. We're from Cali. We're in town for the weekend. You know, we want to do a show. Now, if you've got a prime slot, then you're in luck, buddy. Because, well, how much do you pay? And the guy's like,
pay? This is an industry showcase.
Okay, no money. Okay, well, look, here's what we're going to do. You put us on prime, you take care of our travel, and you make sure we got free booze all night, and you got a deal, okay? And this guy's just on the other end of the phone like,
what?
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, we're on. See you Friday, turkey. Hang up on the guy, you know, it's like, I think we have a 9 p.m. slot. we just turned up. They called our names and we just fist bumped each other and that was it. We jumped into the characters and we were like, let's give these people something they'd never seen before. We stormed on stage. We started chasing each other around the stage with props, fake knives, one of us wearing a bra. Each song just a crazy concept with an obscene stage show that kind of resembled like a night at the theater if you were on shrooms. We came off stage that night and that performance never stopped. The characters we were that night never stopped for 2 years. We went from actively seeking and chasing management to having the biggest guys in the industry calling us. We signed to
the biggest manager,
Jonathan Charlotte. And I remember sitting there trying to sound like it's no big deal. Like I forgot who is on the line and what's on the line. And I'm just like, look, John McLean, we don't get out of bed for less than 70 grand. And he just says, deal. And I'm like, what? I dropped the phone. I'm just freaking out. I'm like, why did I say 70? I could have said 100, you know?
I think at that point you realize that our accents weren't actually that good. They were okay. They weren't actually that good. That's just how good at acting the part we were.
Now we had financial backing from a real force in the industry. And this was on. All of a sudden, our plan wasn't even looking crazy anymore. We started living the dream. We were recording every day, doing shows, touring, building a fan base, sleeping with the hottest woman on the planet. One morning, we were coming back off this hellish tour. And as soon as my head hit the pillow, I got this phone call from our management. He was like, dude, good news and bad news. He's like, the bad news is you're not coming off tour. And I'm about to blow up at him. And he's like, wait, the good news is you're going on the road with your very best friends.
D12. You're gonna get to hook up with Eminem and Proof. And he's so excited. I can tell he's like dying with excitement, you know? I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm dying. You know, I'm dying with anxiety here. And he's like, the tour starts tonight. Bus is gonna come pick you up in 3 hours. Get some rest. I just dropped the phone. I'm just like, we're done for. That's it. We get to the venue and we're trying to act all normal, but I'd never been this nervous. As we got to the stage, they were on stage sound checking. And one of our team's like, dude, there's your boy Proof, man, you know, good, there's your guy. And they finished and they were heading our way. We were right at the edge of the stage. And at that point, we were at the mercy of the gods and we had no other option but to do what we always did, which was just improvise. We just get all loud and we're like, whoa, what's up, Proof? You know, Pardo's cracking. You know, we're just like, what's it be like, what was it be like, 2 years? Warped Tour, right? San Diego, yeah! Thank God they played along. Or they're maybe just nice people and, you know, didn't want to turn around and be like, who are you guys?
Well, Gavin, really quick, can we stop really quick here? What about the people that it, you know, could have potentially hurt? Because the thing about lying is it can advance your career, but it also potentially puts other people's trust in you. It compromises that, right? Like,
come on, man. It's the survival of the fittest out here, you know? And remember, we weren't trying to make it happen for fans or to release this act to a world and sell millions of records. We were trying to get into the industry, make a big bang, and then come clean, you know, and make a point. But we just got completely caught up with the whole fun of the life. To us, everything had to be louder, you know. It had to look like we were on personality steroids. You become like you with all the levels put up. It's almost like you can feel the inside of you going, you know, it's like you begin. You become the monster all of a sudden. My girlfriend broke up with me because she came down and visited and she just didn't like what she saw. She was like, I hate this guy. And I kind of had to break character after like one night out and I was kind of like, it's me, I'm still me, you know, I'm just playing the guy, you know. And she couldn't get it. She was like, nah, you love that guy. You're him. You love this guy. I wasn't until that point, but I kind of started to lose my way after that. As it gradually went on, it was constant paranoia. Like, oh my God, he knew, we're done for. This is totally not going to work. You know, it's so constantly breaking ourselves down. And when the fun dried up and we attempted to get down to business, it became apparent that we were losing windows to release. Before long, it's 2 years and everyone's going, why are these guys not in the charts? Why is this not released? Like, who's dropping the ball? So we had a meeting set up and this guy was no joke. He's got a little sticky note that someone's given him of negatives, of reasons that we should be dropped, right? And he starts reading them out. You guys have missed another release window. That's a few now. You refuse to censor your songs. You have a song called which is banned. And his face is just wincing in disgust with everything he reads out. It was really funny that the things that we created that got us in there were the very things that slowly but surely Sony tried to change. Well, that was it. We were just shelved with no apparent release date. Bill and I's relationship just got dangerous and we blamed each other perennially. And that kind of pent-up frustration, that just boiled. One day, we had this crazy, crazy, crazy fight. One of those fights that, you know, you just don't come back from. And the next morning, he left. The things I went through after that were crazy. They were hellish. I was in the darkest point of my life. I had found confidence, and you would have thought, wow, okay, this person should be able to walk through walls now. But then the bubble burst, and I start to believe that only happened because I was playing the character.
So all of a sudden I was scared to go back to the boy who was beaten at school and who was a fish out of water, and I didn't want to be that guy anymore. I didn't want to go back and be that guy and then have the failure weighing me down.
So I was still in the character because I didn't know who to go and be again. Then my friend, a close friend, Ivan, got a rare form of cancer. Ivan actually knew who I really was, myself and a friend, through a benefit concert to raise money for his treatment. And it would be the return of Brains, the Californian rapper, you know, and I knew I could fill a room of fans and industry people and make some decent money for Ivan's treatment. And then it came to the night of the gig. My new band was just about to go on and do our first performance, and I remember hearing that Ivan, he wasn't going to make it. I had this real problem. My band had just walked on stage, and I'm like, I can't stop crying, and I'm frozen at the side of the stage. My band members are playing the song, and they're just kind of improvising, like, why is he not on stage? I turn to my friend Rob, and I'm just like, oh, man, dude, who am I? Who am I going to be? And he said, just be who Ivan knows. Just cut all this crap. Be you. I stepped on stage and I just said, I'm Gavin Bain. I'm not Brains McLeod. I'm Scottish. I felt like there was this unbelievable cage that was dragging around with me everywhere. And I just felt like at that point that I just dropped the cage.
I did a kind of moment of silence for Ivan, which was the dumbest thing to do. And I think someone shouted out, talk again, say something. Do you know what I mean? And it was like, when I came off stage,
some girls came up and slapped me. Some people came up and was like, after everything we've been through, you do this to me? You've been in my mother's house. You know, like, stupid, like, so, you know?
One of my close friends, Dan, who I loved from Sony, came up and was like, what? This is the greatest thing that I've ever been a part of.
I wasn't really caring about the bad or the negative. I'm glad it happened.
From being told that we would never make it, we've won.
But it sounds like that sort of pushed you over the edge a little bit.
It did, but, you know, you have to experience the edge. You know, I would never have got to this point if it didn't.
And you had to lie extensively to do it, you know, which isn't...
As soon as you hear the word lie, you think we were lying to people. But that's not really... It really wasn't like that. We weren't lying to people. Even the people that we lie straight to their face never walked away thinking, oh, man, can't believe it. I invested time in those... No, it wasn't like that. It was like, we're here to have the most fun, and you're going to love us. You're going to absolutely love us. We're going to entertain you nonstop.
But you are not American, for example. That's like not an ambiguous fact.
Of course. But I would like to consider it like changing reality. Like, so something where I would say something crazy that I wanted to achieve when I hadn't achieved it yet, and I would tell people I'd achieved it because it would create the pressure that I had to then go and achieve it to the point where then I would just go and achieve it. I've done things my whole life that way, like you're going to tour with Eminem, and then boom, end up touring with DJ. You know, it's like setting these big things that you need to, because you're going to look stupid if you don't.
But don't you want to just get famous on exactly what you are?
Yeah, and that's kind of exactly what I did, because I'm a great actor.
Big thanks to Gavin for speaking with the Snap. Now, Gavin Bain, he is still at it, ladies and gentlemen, but he's back to rapping in his Scottish accent. And you can find all 10, yes, 10 albums that he's released without any help from a big label, but in the Apple Store, or we'll have a link at snapjudgment.org. That piece was produced by Julia DeWitt, with sound design by Renzo Gorio.